Tres, dos, uno, go.
Welcome back to the Triad of the Force podcast, a podcast from three Puerto Rican friends coming together to do deep dives into Star Wars and other nerd-related media. Today, we're doing our episode 32, and as our intro promises, we are doing other nerd-related media after a little hiatus of doing that. And today, as you can see, Nelly's not joining us. She's a little busy with a student protest and law school and all those fun things from the UPR back at home. But the awesome Josie is here to substitute and help us talk about some awesome films. So welcome back. This is your third time.
Welcome.
So it's amazing. Yes. Yeah.
We know that when I arrive, we bring the spice, and it's very appropriate. Of what we're going to be talking about.
Oh my, I see what the you did there. I promise takes. It was not planned. This was a spontaneous spice pun. So spoiler alert. Yeah, we are going to talk effectively about Dune and everything that comes with it. Was it a good movie? Was it a bad movie? Was it overrated? Was it mediocre? We don't know. Like director Denis Villeneuve told us we had to see it at the movie theater. I don't know if everyone did, but I obeyed because I felt intimidated by it. So I went, I saw it in the movie theater. So I have thoughts, and obviously everyone had thoughts. Mo and I were texting about it, and we were like, hey, okay, so apparently we're going against the grain here based on what the internets have been saying about this alleged masterpiece. So like I said, who better to talk about spiciness and hot takes than Josie? So
we're here.
Before we go into Dune, though, Eternals is coming out this week. I think it comes out tomorrow, if I'm not mistaken. I have my tickets for Sunday, so I haven't seen the movie yet. But Josie, you had the privilege of seeing that movie. We were just talking before we started recording about some of the odd negative press that that movie has been getting. And I thought it was a good way to start before going into Dune, because we were talking that Dune has been suffering or benefiting, I guess, from the opposite problem, where Dune has been getting like a lot of praise, maybe too much praise. And the Eternals is getting the first Rotten Tomatoes movie that Marvel has. So what are your thoughts on that, having seen the movie, and what are your impressions on some of those reviews?
No, definitely. When I was watching, I remember when I watched Dune for the first time, and my little notes while I was watching the film, I was like, this feels like a highbrow version of what Eternals probably wants to be. Like, it definitely felt like art house indie, even though obviously it's not indie, but that's the aesthetic that it felt like Villeneuve was going for like elevated sci-fi, which is what he's known for, especially with Blade Runner 2049, which is better than Dune. And
there we go. Boom.
Well, so when I watched Eternals, I just realized that it had a lot of the stuff that for me was missing from Dune, which was emotion. Dune does have emotion, but there is a certain depth and vulnerability that I've come to know from Villeneuve, even though the only other film from him that I've seen has been Blade Runner 2049, but it leaves an impact. And there's a lot of emotion there. And especially when you follow Kay's journey. And here it felt distant. It felt a little stale at times. And I think it's because of that two-parter. But I still think, like, knowing how Villeneuve works with Blade Runner 2049, I thought he would be able to still manage to make it feel whole, even though it is a half of a story. I was missing that. And with Eternals, it's getting the same criticism, but while Dune is being praised for that criticism, Eternals is not, clearly. And I don't know, I really liked Eternals. I do see, like, the biggest fault I will give it is that it felt like we skipped 10 movies and this was the last one. So it's a lot, it's 10 characters that you're trying to develop, a story that is quite big for just one film. So it's a lot. It's definitely a lot and it's overwhelming, but if you go along for the ride, you will like it. If you like Marvel, you will enjoy it. If you like Chloe Zhao humanizes people, it's perfect. Because they're larger than life as superheroes, but in the end, they are very human. Because they've been living on Earth for over seven centuries.
Yeah, like 7, decades. Not that long.
No, they've been there for 7,000 years, and they've adapted and formed part of this Earth. And some of them are actually fighting that necessity, like that will to adapt. Some of them don't want to adapt. So it plays a lot with that. Everyone's really great. It's very character driven. So mm-hmm. even though there are 10 people, you know them immediately. And that was something too, that even though with Dune, you get to spend more time with these people. I don't remember their names. I remember everyone's names mm-hmm. in Eternals. I don't remember anyone's name in Dune. And I think that's a pretty good way to summarize it. I preferred Eternals. I think that's a good way to end that little rant.
Do you think that Eternals has been getting like that bad? I mean, we are Latina, Latinx, whatever mm-hmm. you want to call us, a focus podcast. Obviously, we're three Puerto Ricans, so we mm-hmm. look at all this media from that lens. So obviously, one of the things that stands out to me when comparing both movies is that there's some things that are very particular to each that I don't know if it's the reason why each one has gotten mm-hmm. the prism, right? From one being positive and being negative, but it's the representation both in cast and crew, primarily mm-hmm. both with director and leads and one movies, you know, an Asian woman. The other one is a white French man and the cast. While the cast of Dune is diverse, I will give it that. The most of the diversity is placed on the outsiders and the locals of the planet mm-hmm. Dune, and everyone that's more let's call it pale is, you know, on the on House Atreides. Even though Space Papi Oscar Isaac is daddy Atreides, whatever his name we still get Timothy Chalamet as like our white savior. And then when we switch into Eternals, the whole we do have Angelina Jolie and other like more
Richard Madden, Kit Harington,
but as a whole, Barry the whole Cohen. Cast right reads more diverse and representative, right? So do you think that in a way has to do with why one has one reception and one doesn't?
I don't want to be one of those people that's like, oh, it's because it's diverse, it's because it has a female director, but we have seen this pattern too many times to ignore. Mm-hmm. And people will discredit that criticism immediately because it's like, no, it's because of this and this, but then they're not actually telling you exactly what it is. Like, oh, mm-hmm. it's not because it's a woman directing. Oh, it's not because it has queer, deaf, and diverse representation. But then mm-hmm. they don't really tell you what it is. Like, then mm-hmm. why don't you like it? And of course, it also got bombed, like review bombing on IMDb. Yeah. That has happened before, like with Black Panther and
Shang-Chi. And Captain Marvel, which mm-hmm. like there's some similarities there with that string of film, right? Yep. It's like, what's the common thread of all these movies that are all of a sudden review bombed? Oh, one has a Black actor, one has an Asian actor, and mm-hmm. one has a woman. Interesting connection there.
Right. Yeah. And there are people that generally wish this film harm because of those mm-hmm. details, but then there are people that are criticizing it and are saying that they don't like it. But again, they don't really bring criticism other than the pacing was slow. And I think for that one, I immediately responded because I'm a 90-minute gal. Mm-hmm. I love films that are 90 minutes. 2 hours is too much for me. Mm-hmm. I have mm-hmm. things to do.
Right.
I like all, to, yeah. I want to enjoy things. The day. Yeah. But, it did not feel slow. Like mm-hmm. with Dune, I definitely felt it, but it was because it is a gargantuan thing. Mm-hmm. But the Eternals, I am aware that it's 2 hours, but by the end of it, I was like, whoa, okay, it's over.
Yeah, absolutely. Mo, you were going to say something.
Oh, no, I think like going back to like the diversity of the cast, like even within the, what you would say, the quote unquote main characters, mm-hmm. like the ones that are diverse, they just die and disappear. Through mm-hmm. the movie, like you have amazing cast mm-hmm. to then just leave the two white saviors alive at the end. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Everybody else, you know, the doctor, Daddy Atreides, the kid's friend. I don't remember their names. That's no. another mm-hmm. fault with this movie. It's like, what are the names? I have no idea. I'm with Josie there. Like,
sweet Jason Momoa, the best thing out of that movie.
Duncan Idaho. I mean,
yeah,
I
what think a stupid reason, sci-fi name.
I know. I think the reason we remember that Paul is called Paul is because what a basic name.
Yeah. It's, I mean, there's, it's it's interesting because it's not as if like a lot of these like sci-fi names in Dune are that complicated, because I mean, if we can digest Game of Thrones and Lord of the Rings and there's some messed up names in there and remember them, it's not about the complexity of the name. It's more about how they're introduced in the story and how they're used organically to let us as an audience member remember them. And I think Dune kind of like fails that a little bit, except with Duncan, Idaho, because that name is just too ridiculous to forget. They might as well have called him Potato Ohio or something. Potato. I don't know.
I think there's one review I really liked by Steph Koza on Twitter, where she said that Dune relies on its epic scale to convince you that it's cool.
Fact.
Yeah.
Summary. So, that's Dune in a summary.
Podcast done. And credits. Dune in a nutshell. So with that, I think we can like start our reaction of Dune proper. This is a movie I was more or less hyped up for. I mean, yeah. You know, it's a sci-fi film. I love epic films. I love sci-fi films. I've liked a couple of the Denis films I've seen before. I love The Rival. Blade Runner 2049, I think, is a spectacular film. And to your point about movies being too long, Blade Runner 2049 is a movie that I think is like 10 hours long, but it's actually the pacing of it is superb, because like it feels long, but you're there for the ride and you're just like, okay, it's unraveling what happens next. And you just want to stick with it till the end. Dune for sure is a movie that, Jesus Christ. Like I was like, maybe it's because I saw the last screening of the day and I was like tired and I had work the next day or something, but I was just looking at my phone going like, Jesus Christ, there's an hour and a half left. And I thought I've been here for an hour and a half. But Letterboxd, I gave it a 4 out of 5 stars. So I did enjoy the movie to there's more positives than negatives, I think. Overall, I think that all the hypeness for me kind of like drove it down a little bit. And yeah, it was a little too muddied. To use a colloquial expression, it was up its own ass a little too much. It took itself too seriously, too self-absorbed, I feel. So definitely an overrated film with some great performances, amazing visuals, great world building. So I could go both ways in terms of like what worked and what didn't work. But for me, the thing that just like stays with me is how disappointed I was, especially like by the end, because at the end you just feel, I felt unfulfilled, because you know that the movie's going to continue. But to use an example we were talking about before we started recording, right, we were talking about Lord of the Rings, you know, it's 3 books, you know, it's 3 movies when you get into the movie, so you expect that there won't be a resolution to the overall story, but there will be a resolution to the arc of the main narrative. And with Dune, it just feels like, done. And we can argue back and forth if like that, it was just the culmination of his first journey of his arc into accepting him going into the desert. We can go back and forth on that. But at least for me as a whole, about how the movie closed its all filmic narrative arc, I think it failed in that department. I think it should have looked into Fellowship of the Ring and gotten a few more notes from that. But those were my initial impressions. Josie, what about you? I mean, you already gave us a little bit about what your thoughts were, especially in comparison with Eternals, but you can go crazy now with only Dune.
Yeah, I think for me, it was just the technicalities and like production design, the music, all of that is really nice. But for me, the story just, I wanted more.
Mm.
And I am aware that it's a two-parter, but I think something can still be pretty fulfilling, like Lord of the Rings, and stand on its own, even though it clearly has other parts. And I was missing that, because there came a point where when watching Dune, I was like, what am I waiting for? What is this leading towards? And then you have that, of course, no spoilers, but there is conflict in the end, there is a small fight, and you're like, okay, is this what we were leading for? Because I did not feel the weight that probably needed to have, which is again, like, you're seeing Paul go through this loss of innocence, and I described it as like the antithesis of Kay's journey, when Kay is becoming more human and growing more empathy, Paul is losing it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to feel that more. So for me, it's just, I wanted that because I feel like Villeneuve is so good at bringing stories that just feel. You feel them. You feel, mm-hmm. you go with them. You go with the characters on their journey. And with this mm-hmm. one, I was so disconnected and I didn't want to be. So it was very frustrating.
Well, what about you?
I think it's interesting because even though the movie showed a lot of things, it the quote, like, show, don't tell, still, mm-hmm. like, resonates along this whole journey.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We, like Josie said, there's, like, a lot of sprinkles of things, of, like, storylines that could be interesting mm-hmm. to follow up, be like, okay, is this movie about the political regime and
mm-hmm.
infighting of an empire? Is this movie about the rebellion from the empire? Is this mm-hmm. a messiah movie? Is this, like, what, define yourself, like, what's your, what are you trying to show me?
Mm-hmm.
Like, don't mm-hmm. just give us, like, oh, this is so majestic and the world is so big. Like, it's a beautiful movie. Don't take mm-hmm. like mm-hmm. the shots are amazing. The music.
Yeah.
Music, I understand why they said, you know, watch it in theaters, because to be honest, I started watching it at home and I couldn't handle half an hour. I was like, what is going on? So I finished watching it in theater and all I got was, like, you know, half of it is, like, beautiful, amazing shots of nature, which is great.
Great.
I mean, mm-hmm. don't take me wrong. I love Planet Earth. I love
that's Fellowship of the Ring too. It's like, just establishing shots.
But they, at first I thought they were going to be there to present, like, the change of things. You know, it started with, like, water planet and then you're going to move into a desert planet and how it transitioned and how that changed the character. I think they wanted to rely on that. It just didn't felt organic,
mm-hmm.
Especially with that, the palm scene where, you know, it's the only scene we see water within Dune,
mm-hmm.
apart from the Atreides planet, and it's a very interesting line of thought and development, but you don't see that tied to the characters. You know, you, mm-hmm. you start with the main character who is, you know, all of a sudden you're the messiah, you're supposed to fill that role, and you have, like, half of the movie is him just, no, I'm this all BS, I'm not gonna fall for this, like,
mm-hmm.
you've watched every, and then all of a sudden it's like, you know what, I'm the messiah now, everybody bow down, like,
yeah,
I'm doing my, like, what happened? Like, I understand they tried to do, like, almost a, what you would call, like, a spiritual journey,
mm-hmm.
but it just felt like out of place,
mm-hmm.
because you establish that the spice is all about, like, either used as a weapon for interstellar time travel and whatever,
yeah.
Like, and then on a cultural basis, it's all about, I almost see it, like, akin to, like, ayahuasca or different, mm-hmm. like, hallucinogens that cultures have used to expand their consciousness,
mm-hmm.
and yet we don't see that. They tell us, but we don't see, like, the implications of that. Like, why would they all of a sudden, the inhabitants of the planet will be like, you know what, that's fine, take away all the spice, just leave us alone. Like,
mm-hmm.
really, is that how you feel if somebody was came to take away your most precious resource, the mm-hmm. one you establish your whole, like, or their existence, and it changes your appearance and everything? Mm-hmm. And the story just felt bland. It was beautiful. It felt like at times I was just, like, watching a super long, like, perfume commercial. Like, I was like,
I can
Johnny
see it.
Depp is gonna walk around there and be like Savage,
or yeah, something like that. Versace, yeah.
Because
I love it. Someone should do a cut of that for TikTok, just like the Zendaya sequences of the visions, and just put a perfume at the end. I love it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, but it was a beautiful movie. I'll give it that. I love
it's visually pleasing.
Spaceships.
Like, yeah. Oh, yeah. Design of everything was amazing.
Design of a spaceship. I was like, oh, that just looks like amazing. And I wanted to know more about the sisters, the Bene. Like, this is like interesting. Like, follow that route. Like, see how it's involved in the Messiah of the kid. But no.
Well, it's interesting because from what I understand, without having read the books and having only seen the David Lynch film, the 84, the role of those of that group of sisters or whatever you want to call them, the Night Sisters of Dune, was expanded from the original movie and the books to like be a little more prominent and give them more importance in the film. So I think it's interesting that you said that you want to even explore that even more, considering that they already boosted the presence and their importance in the movie. It's not that I disagree, it's just that I think it's an interesting point to make that it was a minimal presence before that was augmented, but it was still lacking. I think that's interesting. But I think you also bring up something, and both of you did bring up something that I think is super interesting about the movie, and it's about showing and not telling. And I think that the movie just excels at doing both and failing at both at the same time, because the movie shows so much, but then it tells you so much. And at the end of the day, you like don't have enough information about any of it, because like with the Baron Harkonnen and the Atreides thing, I mean, before going into that, I think the best way to summarize it is to compare it to the David Lynch movie, which is a shit show. I mean, that movie's a dumpster fire. But one thing that that movie at least does well is kind of explain everything. It's like, hey, this is what's happening. There's this emperor guy, and then there's these deals, and then it's the Game of Thrones in space, and Ned Stark and everything. It's like, okay, well, that was a lot of exposition, but at least I know what's happening. And it's benefit or it's curse, I don't know what to say now, especially with this new Dune. The movie does the whole arc of the whole book, so like at least you know how it ends. It's like, okay, well, at least it's paid off and I know what happens to his journey. But with this Dune, it's like you get a little exposition at the beginning, but you don't really know what's up. And it's like, who's this emperor and why is this Game of Thrones the way it is? Like, I don't get it. So like, you don't really know I don't know. I feel like the establishing of the conflict wasn't established that well. So you're just confused getting into it, which makes you not be invested in the story as much as you could be, I feel.
David Lynch also just likes being weird.
David Lynch is really, really weird in a equal measures great and disturbing. So I don't know. But that's the problem, I think. He was supposed to also one of the people that George Lucas wanted to have direct Return of the Jedi. So I would have loved to have seen what disasters he would have done with that. I mean,
the storyboard alone.
Yeah. I don't know if that makes sense. I mean, one shows too much, one shows too little, one says too much, one says too little. So both movies have the opposite problems and both fail in the same way at the end of the day, because then you don't care about any of the characters either way, because it's like, okay, one went too fast even though it was long, and then one went too slow and it was too long. So I don't even know. This movie just confuses me. Because that's the problem. It's a good movie that we all visually like, and we can all pick apart all the things that are great, but it doesn't click. And I think that's an interesting thing. A good movie that doesn't click is more mysterious than a bad movie that clicks.
Mysterious. Especially, I think the part I like is that at least people are sort of aware, because not everyone was fully aware at the beginning that Paul isn't a hero. He's a white savior and he is a colonizer. He's not meant to be the hero. And a lot of people were kind of missing the point with that one.
I think that's a super good point. And I think the people that are okay with that, like that just don't get that, I think they need to look into self in the mirror and ask yourself, why don't I get it? I'm just going to leave it at that. But I think Denis is aware of that. Mm-hmm. And I think he tries to soften the blow of, oh, the white savior slash colonizer by showing Oscar Isaac being like the space pappy being, okay, no, we're going to, I'm going to be a benevolent ruler. I'm going to understand the people of Dune and blah, 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 blah. So it's just like, oh, so you're a nice colonizer.
I got like Pinochet vibes from Atreides. So I was like, I don't know how, you know, are you speaking from the mouth out? Like we never saw their backish. And if they are within the power of the Empire, I will not put it behind them doing terrible things. I mean, there's a reason why the symbol of the grandfather is the bullfighter. Mm-hmm, like, mm-hmm. You know, they're merciless. They will kill an innocent animal if they have to for the power. Like, I don't know. I don't know how good they are.
I think that's what gets lost. This is because they're the protagonists and they're whitewashed, and the director make a conscious effort to portray them in such a positive light. Obviously, that point is lost because, I mean, that's the story of Western society, especially in representation, right? The people that are doing the oppressing aren't, or the colonizing, well, they're both one and the same, right? Are the good guys. So like there's no introspection in that. And that kind of goes back to when we were talking about Suicide Squad, right? And we were talking about the scene where they're killing all the freedom fighters. It's played up for jokes. And it's just like, yeah, whatever. Like when you guys are fighting for your freedom, whatever, but we have to come in and rescue you, and then we have to be self-aware and rescue the oppressed. So like Suicide Squad did in a horrible way because they played it up for jokes, and Dune just does it without even realizing that it's doing it. It's just like,
especially the worst part is that we didn't get to see the other side that was being affected, and it's set up as like, oh, we'll see this in part two, and it's like, then we're only seeing the colonizer side.
Yeah, we'll just see the colonizer side.
Right. We just see the two interactions, right? We see at the beginning Javier Bardem, which like took me by surprise because I clearly did not look at that poster up close. Because when Javier Bardem shows up, I'm like, what the? It's Javier Bardem. Clearly, I did not look at the poster.
No wonder. It was like familiar, but yet like...
Like he, gross. Like I loved his role. I think he did a good job. He's a great actor, right? But he's portrayed like an asshole, right? This is come. He spits at the throne or whatever, the conference room table of Oscar Isaac and stuff.
But that was established like it was like their tradition. You know, I'm sharing my water.
But it is. But it's still the optics of it is portrayed to like, oh, these barbarians or like these heathens.
It's the
or
way that it's presented.
Oh, yeah. It's meant it's from the colonizer's perspective.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And then the next interaction we have with the locals is the end when Timothy Chalamet has to kill one of them. And which one does he kill? The black guy. It's like, what are you doing? It's like what the hell are you doing? It's like you infuse all of this with Islamic Arabic influences and whatnot, but then you do it in a not good way, because then the white guy has to come and appropriate that culture to then liberate that culture. It's like, haven't we done this movie before?
Yeah, and also the whole question that the movie is proposing that I don't know, because I don't want to be spoiled, so I haven't looked it up, but there's again the whole question of, is he actually the chosen one? Is he actually the Messiah?
Oh, going Harry Potter direction, is it Neville or is it Harry? Which one?
Well, I mean, he can be like the Antichrist for the society as well. Like, the Antichrist will just assume they're the Messiah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It wouldn't come through them like, oh, yeah, I'm the Antichrist.
It just amuses me so much of thinking of seeing Timothy Chalamet's face and like Antichrist in the same sentence.
I mean, he has that type of handsomeness where I think he could easily be Damien from The Omen. He could play both. I think. And we're reaching that point with Timothy Chalamet where we're going to get some like obscene amount of saturation. I think we're getting. Mm-hmm. I think we're gonna get to Chris Pratt levels of Timothy Chalamet.
Oh, I hope not.
Because he was like in Call Me By Your Name. Now he's in this. He French Dispatch. Which I haven't seen yet. I'm sorry. That one, he's gonna be in that. I can tell it's gonna be horrible. A Willy Wonka prequel. So it's kind of like, okay, make your money, kid, but pump the brakes. We don't want to be saturated by you.
He picks.
Oh, maybe it's all movies. About the fire.
True. Because I just read the news of Chris. Not to switch to. From Dune. I just have to get it out.
It hurt all of us.
Chris Pratt as Garfield. It's like, why? Did they not see the reaction he got when he was cast mm-hmm. as Mario?
No one. He's appropriating Italian culture, and we can't stand for this.
He's a bootlicker, you know. It's not to say that we can't. Everyone has to be the same ideology as you, but mm-hmm. He's the lesser of the Chris's, and he should not be getting that many roles. Stop, Chris. Just take a break. Go to vacation.
Your whole chest.
Yeah. Anyway, coming back to Dune. I felt there was also like a thing with the Hobbit trilogy, you know, where they mm-hmm. took like the source material and like stretched it out to like be too much. And it didn't find like a logical cutting point for any of the two movies that preceded the last one. So same thing with Dune, like the arc where it ended on this one, I don't think it was the best place in terms of how they chose to structure the narrative to like stop the movie. Because I think in a personal way for Timothy Chalamet, it made sense for his story to end there because that's the point where he accepts like his role in the story and like where he decides he needs to change and then continues on, right? So I get it in terms of his character development. But when you see how the film was structured in terms of like the greater scope of the Harkonnen and Atreides and Dune and the people of Dune and everything that was happening, it's kind of like, well, one journey ended, but this one's still at the beginning. So like all of this has to catch up with that. So like there's no payoff. And especially with Timothy Chalamet's character, you're paying it off when you didn't set it up either. So it's like, you can't have a payoff without the setup. You have to set it up before you pay it off. So there was odd pacing, which again doesn't happen in Arrival, doesn't happen in Blade Runner 2049, which are two Denis films that I think are also very long but also very good that don't drag. So I don't know. Dune so far is it's not doing too hot in our book, apparently.
No, so I was gonna like adding to that, I think the movie also like has the potential to like alienate a lot of viewers. There's almost like, it feels like it will be like the equivalent of like, oh, you have to go to a museum to like see this movie. Mm-hmm. Oh, you have to go to theaters to see this movie. Like, yeah. And I'm thinking like for, you know, the reactions I saw with all my siblings. So I was like, you know, like half of it is like, wait, who's who? What's happening? Like trying to figure out that part of the story mm-hmm. while also like trying to be like, oh, this is like, it's so visually striking. This mm-hmm. like, you have to look at the details and like be on the lookout of like what mm-hmm. they're putting out there. Especially I think like the most glaring one was like with the treatment of the worm.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to present the worm like as this mythical mm-hmm. creature, probably, you know, the image that they showed when they were like in the building at when they first got to Dune,
mm-hmm.
It was like a very large mural, almost looked like, you know, like a serpent god with like,
yeah,
infinite like strands. And that reminded me of like, oh wait, I've seen this before. It's the ring that Carl Jung used to wear.
Mm-hmm.
It's called like the Gnostic serpent or the Gnostic ring.
Mm-hmm.
And it's supposed to symbolize like the Christ. Mm-hmm. Like it's above it. It's like according to Zhang, this what it means. It's like it's Egyptian. The serpent is carved, which symbolizes Christ. Above it, the face of a woman. Below, the number 8, which is the symbol of the infinite, of the labyrinth, and the road of the unconscious. I have changed one or two symbols on the ring so that the symbol will be Christian. And in a way, that's what mm-hmm. the movie wants to portray, that we're going to see the journey of this kid becoming the Christ.
Mm-hmm.
But then, spell it out. Like, if it, like, see, let us see that journey. Let us not be like, oh, wait, I'm all against it. And then all of a sudden, like, oh, I switch. Yes, I'm the Messiah. Like, yeah, I'm here to save everybody. Like, not only the desert people, I'm here to save the universe. Like,
yeah, because also my big question was the entire time, like, what was his motivation? Because the way that it's set up, it seems like all he wants is to be close to Zendaya's character. That at least that's how it came out to me. Like, it felt more like, oh, I really like this person and I want to meet them. I want to find them. Because at the beginning, it's like when Duncan Idaho is sent to the planet, he's like, can I go with you? And it's because he had that vision. Right. So the entire time, it's kind of romance driven or like infatuation. So
he needed an I want song so we can just understand.
He really needed an I want song, and it just the entire time it just felt for me like his motivation was Zendaya's character, and it felt weird considering everything at a grand scale that was happening around him. Like, Redacted is dying. All these people are dying, and everything that revolves around you is kind of crumbling, and I don't know what you want. I don't know what you want, Paul.
Mo said, I just imagine Denny sitting at his house, like the Joker at the end of Joker, and just being like, you just wouldn't get it. And that's it. Exactly. And it's just like, yeah, we don't. That's why we're doing this episode, Denny. Just explain it to us, please.
And that's why he has a part two. It's like, you don't get it, but you will. Right.
But I saw this meme and I've seen some people like been floating this around, and it's like something that I 100%, okay, not 100, but maybe 90% disagree with. And apparently it's something he said. I don't know from where or when, but saying that basically I'm paraphrasing him saying that he was the audience he was thinking about when he was making this movie was just one, and it was him. And I was like, that's a horrible way to create anything. I mean, I'm not saying that you shouldn't like create from within of yourself, but if you're making, it's not a painting, it's not a song, it's a movie. And a movie is made for other people to see. So if you want to just make your own movie for your house, then fine, do that. But to put yourself in a position to create something that's only meant for you, it's kind of weird, I think. You should make something that everyone can enjoy or wants to enjoy or is able to enjoy. So I don't know. Had any thoughts about that.
No, I haven't heard that, but it is interesting because now putting it through that lens, I can imagine this is how, when they were reading the book, this is how they saw it in their own head. And that's the thing, like, you can imagine it that way, but if you're doing a movie, it doesn't translate. Mm-hmm. Like, where I don't want to see your dream, which is, I guess it was prefaced that way. You know, the whole intro was like something about dreams. It's like, okay, I guess this is your dream. Like, cool. Like, thanks.
Cool story, bro.
Cool story, bro. Like, what are we, what are you aiming at? Like, what's your point? But the music was just,
that's the thing. It's the music, it's the production design, it's the performances. But again, story that holds me back. Like, it's a nearly perfect film. Nearly perfect.
I usually when a movie's kind of too long, sometimes I'm like, oh, you have gotten maybe like 10-20 minutes out of it. Mm-hmm. You might have made a leaner movie that gets to a point quicker. But with Dune, I don't feel comfortable saying that because on the one hand, I'm like, it was way too long, but on the other hand, I'm like, it needed more. So it's just like, so there needs to be a balancing act between maybe the dream sequences are 2/3 shorter, not even half, like 2/3, got it. And then we add a little more exposition about other things. But I don't know. I mean, again, I think it's a very enjoyable movie. I'm glad for everyone that's raving about it. I'm glad you found your thing. That's cool. But did it hit the mark here for us? Apparently not. There's just too many glaring things, especially some of those colonial undertones that were not undertones, mm-hmm. but people just don't pick up on. I think that's mm-hmm. a big thing that I think people should kind of realize a bit more, which is an interesting thing to then explore about how you can recontextualize some of these films that have, you know, were written as books and had those tropes without the person that was, you know, writing them realizing what those tropes mean. Mm-hmm. So how do you adapt that now for the 21st century? Like, how do you subvert the white savior trope? Like, is it like Mo said, we think that he's the white savior, and then it turns out that, oh no, plot twist is not him, it was someone within the culture all along, and he's just a lieutenant or something, or he dies, I don't know. That could be like an interesting subversion to that.
Again, it's like K in Blade Runner 2049. He's kind of like this messiah for the replicas in his head. And then by the end of it, you realize he's not. Or is he?
Or is he? Is he dead? Or is he alive? Is Harrison Ford a replicant? Come on, tell me.
I keep saying he isn't, but maybe I'm wrong. I don't know. But that's maybe, another maybe that's another both. Discussion.
He is and he isn't.
Oh. Yeah, I did like read a like in a replicant. I don't know if it was Ridley Scott or Denis that they were asking them about that. And
yeah,
and they both said that asked. And they're like, that's the point. It doesn't matter.
So Ridley is the one that says that he is, and Harrison says he isn't.
Well, I don't know what Harrison says, but based on all interviews I've seen from Harrison Ford, I would lean towards him saying, I don't care.
That's the thing. He has said he doesn't care. He has said it like live and in person. But also there have been instances where he's like, I thought he was human.
I mean, I personally think that he's a human because I think it makes the story more poignant that then he is, but then he doesn't know. So then what separates us from them? Mm-hmm. Although I do also like the point of not knowing and just having that be a mystery always, because it's like, exactly. You can come at it from both perspectives and it doesn't matter because there is no difference because there's okay, humanity in both. Yeah.
You can be human. You don't have to be Homo sapien. That's a separate species. Yeah.
And again, I wanted that.
I wanted that.
Quería esa profundidad en esta película.
We wanted the humanity in Doom.
Like, for everything it was, it just wasn't transcendental at all in any way. It was just like, okay.
It suffered in a way from the issue that most Chris Nolan films suffer from, and it's that they get criticized for being detached from humanity and being too clinical. And I feel that, and it's appropriate, Hans Zimmer scored this, right? I feel like this movie was clinical and there was like zero humanity in it.
This film gets anything, it's score. It's gonna get score.
Yeah, especially like in the movie theater, man, that whole percussion, it wasn't even music, it was just textures.
The bagpipes, right? When the bagpipes hit.
It was, and no was one like, was ever gonna say that before this movie, yeah. When the bagpipes dropped.
When the dude came out with the bagpipes, I was like, this is cinema.
Yeah. I was like, why? Quickly. This is space. Why?
Like, well, exactly.
But why not?
I mean, but imagine if somebody came out with like flamenco or something, like instead of like bagpipes. Like.
Yes, in the second part.
That's the next thing. Hans Zimmer is just experimenting at this point. He's like, flamenco? Sure.
Hans Zimmer doesn't care. He's just like, he reached a point, he's like a John Williams level where he's just like, I can do whatever I want and no one can question it.
Mm-hmm.
And God bless, keep going, man. Like, do you, boo. I want to see more Hans Zimmer craziness.
So if anything, I think we recommend the film, but we have issues with it.
It's a trepidatious recommendation.
Yeah. I will say wait for the second part.
Yeah, definitely.
Then watch the Netflix recap of the first one.
Yeah. Watch the first one.
It's like when I first saw Lord of the Rings is all of them were out. So I just binged that.
Because like
if, that's yes, a good binge.
This is great.
That's a good binge. That's the best binge. But then like imagine if it, if the second part sucks and it fails to deliver even worse. It's gonna be like, why did I waste all my time watching this?
No, I'm not prepared for that, especially since they haven't I don't know how they did not film these back to back. Because clearly you had in mind that this was going to be two parts. The film literally says Dune,
part one.
Why did you not film them back to back? I know that there was trepidation and fear because you didn't know if it was going to get greenlit. But clearly they were on board.
Yeah, there wasn't that much fear if you had the audacity to slap part one on it and then end on a cliffhanger.
Because like, it just makes me laugh that a lot of people were like, oh yeah, leave Dune playing in the background so it gets those views on HBO Max so we get a part two. And I'm like, we're gonna get it. Why are you guys worried? We're gonna get it. It's freaking called Dune part one.
Part one. Yeah.
Like,
when is part two supposed to come out now? 2023? Is it?
It's gonna take a while. That's why people are like, why didn't they just film them back to back? And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know what's going on there. The politics of it all.
It's a who knows, but I think with that, I think we've done a very substantial, in-depth, and fun analysis of Dune and a little bit of a preview for what we can expect for Eternals. So, if we have any final thoughts before wrapping up on Dune or Eternals, Mo, do you have any last things before we close out the evening or the morning? I guess because we release this in the morning.
Release in the morning. Dune, I don't know. I hope you do a second good part. I think that will determine.
That's like I hope you do a second good part. Like, that's great.
I think
that'll be my letterbox review now.
Yeah, I'm like, what was my letterbox review? I feel like it's something with the bagpipes. I'm pretty sure of it.
It's interesting because on letterbox,
go watch.
That's funny. Because on Letterboxd, I very rarely put an actual review, but maybe I should steal Mo's. That was too good. But with that, I think this is a wrap for today. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you so much, Josie, for joining us. We have been the Triad of the Force. You can before we sign off, Josie, where can people find you? Since you were part of the Triad today, I was just like, oh, you don't need to put links, but yes, yeah. where can we find you?
You can find me at the Josie Marie on Twitter and Letterboxd.
Perfect. Please go find it for more spicy takes. But with that, now we have been the Triad of the Force. You can find us on Twitter at Triad of the Force. We opened the Facebook finally, even though we said we weren't going to do it. But we're on Facebook also and Instagram at Triad of the Force. You can find us there. We have merch on our TeePublic store if you want to support the channel. Check us out on YouTube as well. Don't forget to share, like, and subscribe. But with that, thanks as always, and may the Force be with you.